Okie dokie, so we're in Proverbs chapter 6. We'll start together by reading the first five verses. Proverbs chapter 6 starts with an interesting subject, becoming surety for your friend. Proverbs chapter 6 verses 1 through 5 says, "My son, if you become surety for your friend, if you have shaken hands in pledge for a stranger, you are snared by the words of your mouth. You are taken by the words of your mouth. So do this, my son, and deliver yourself, for you have come into the hand of your friend. Go and humble yourself. Plead with your friend. Give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, and like a bird from the hand of the fowler." So what does it mean here? What does it mean to become surety? Essentially, you may have a translation that says become security, and become security in that line of thinking, essentially the idea that you are putting yourself on the line for someone else. Can anyone think of a time that this was used in this term surety, that this term was used in Old Testament scripture? Bingo. Back in Genesis chapter 42, we see the 10 sons of Jacob went to Egypt to buy grain during the famine. And they, of course, encounter Joseph, who is now the second in command of all of Egypt. Well, Joseph recognized them, and they didn't recognize him. So he had a little bit of fun with them. Accusing them of being spies, he said to bring the youngest brother to him, because Benjamin had been left behind initially. So Simeon stayed behind as part of this agreement. The 9 other brothers returned, relayed the words to Jacob, who refused for fear of something bad happening to Benjamin. But they needed to go back, both for Simeon and for more supplies. So Judah, in chapter 43, becomes surety for Benjamin's sake, saying in chapter 43, Genesis 43 and verse 9, I thought I had that written down in my notes here. One sec, I'll turn there. Genesis 43 verse 9. He says, speaking to his father, "I myself will be surety for him. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever." So when they returned to Egypt with Benjamin this time, in chapter 44, Joseph had this silver cup that he planted in Benjamin's sack and sent his steward to go and to catch them. When they were brought back after being caught, Joseph said Benjamin was going to be his slave because they found that silver cup in his sack. And Judah steps in because, as we just read, he agreed to Jacob to be surety for Benjamin. He stepped up and told Joseph, chapter 44, Genesis, verse 32 through 34, he says, "For your servant became surety for the lad to my father," talking about himself, "I've become surety for Benjamin's sake to my father, saying, 'If I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father forever. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad as a slave to my lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me, lest perhaps I see the evil that would come upon my father?'" So Judah was willing to go the distance to be surety for his brother, willing to be enslaved by Joseph instead of this fate befalling Benjamin. But here in the Proverbs, and getting back to Proverbs chapter 6, Solomon speaks of being surety for friends, making an agreement or a pledge with a stranger. Regarding this, he says, "You are snared and taken by your words, the words of your mouth." What does he mean by that?
If
Maybe he agreed to it before he thought it through. That's a good way to look at it. Sometimes you want to have this, you want to do this good thing for them, but you don't read the fine print. You don't think it all the way through. And so whenever you make this vow or you make this agreement, you're putting yourself on the line. And what? Yeah. Yeah, that's a good modern application, a cosigner, if you were going to buy a car or something large, expensive like that. But, you know, looking at these words, snared and taken by your words. Respectively, these words means to lure or entice, to snare, to set a trap, to capture, to seize, to catch. You make these agreements, these pledges. You make yourself security. You must understand that you are essentially trapping yourself in this agreement, binding yourself to this agreement, no matter what would happen. So what's the danger involved in this? Absolutely. You don't know what to expect. You can't. It's possible, and let me tell you why. Because go back to that first verse again. He says, you become surety for your friend if you've shaken hands with the pledge in the pledge for a stranger. Think about the word friend here. Looking at the word friend, it's definitely something that can mean somebody you are acquainted with, somebody you know, somebody that you are friends with, but the word is also used in acquaintance type of setting. I know him a little bit. I worked with him for about a year, you know, that type of acquaintance. And then stranger. Stranger is the same word we've been seeing in previous chapters. Let me back up here. That is true, too. Sometimes the true colors. Sometimes true colors come out after it's all too late. Let's see here. So what we're getting from this is you don't always know what you're getting involved in. Even if you think you know the person, or especially if you don't know the person, there's going to be some troubles that come along down the line if you get involved with this person. Can the stranger be just somebody that randomly came up to you? Absolutely. Can the stranger be, like we're talking about, one of the people that we're about to see here going further into chapter 6? Absolutely. And I believe, to Celeste's point, these two types of people that we see next, the lazy and the perverse and wicked, they can very well be the people that you get involved with these strange pledges, if you will. Because if somebody's lazy, if somebody's going to be lazy, they're not going to keep their end of the bargain. And that puts you, who is in pledge with this person, in a bad situation. If you make a pledge with the worthless, wicked person, you're going to be the first, foremost person that is affected by their wickedness. You're in pledge with this person. You've made this agreement with this person. And when it all goes south, they're coming for you. I was looking for a verse here. It was one of the previous verses we talked about in regard to the adulterous woman. And of course, because I'm looking at it in a time crunch, I'm not finding it. But there's a passage where it calls her the strange person, and that you're 2:16. Deliver you from an immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words. Okay, that's probably it then. But this idea of stranger in Proverbs chapter 6, it's the same word as we see in the previous chapters, referring to people who are involved in wickedness. So, again, to Celeste's point, yes, these very well could be people that we are getting involved in surety with and in pledges with. And so, with the dangers involved with becoming surety for your friend or being in pledge with a stranger, can't expect everything to be smooth sailing. You know, let's say you become surety for someone. Let's say it is your friend. Let's say your friend wants to buy a plot of land. Maybe they want to start a farm. And you agree to be surety for them. Essentially, you are saying, coming into a legal or spoken agreement with them that you're going to pay for them if they ever get in a bind. That sounds benevolent, right? It sounds nice, right? But let's say it happens. They come under hard times. You can't pay. They can't pay. So now you've made yourself obligated to pay. Despite whatever hard times you yourself might be going through. And secondly, again, you can't expect what the other person in this agreement will do to you. Agreements change even the closest of friends, let alone if you get involved in an agreement with a stranger. Happens to family also. You know, money gets involved, especially. Feeling of being owed something, that changes dynamics between friends and family, and especially strangers. And Solomon also writes here about being, well, we've been talking about that. My notes were getting to the stranger eventually. A friend can be lenient and forgiving, but a stranger, can we ever know what to expect with a stranger? Absolutely not. They could be lenient and forgiving as well, or they could be merciless and expect you to keep up your end of the bargain to your own detriment. And if you can't keep it up, again, that's when they're going to take action against you. They are going to come for you. So, what is Solomon's advice regarding becoming surety? Run. Save yourself. He says, get out of it. Go and humble yourself immediately. Do not rest until the matter is resolved. He says, give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. And why do you think Solomon gives this advice? Well, it's like we've been talking about. Those pledges, those promises that we make, they can hurt us in the long run if we're not careful. If we're involved with the wrong kind of people, or if our friend, if we decide to be surety for a friend or family, and they choose to go against us because of that surety, that's going to hurt us. We got to be careful. As much as we think we're helping someone, we can help someone without being in a binding agreement with them. Miss Ellen. Exactly. Don't procrastinate about taking care of the problem. Just like Solomon says, don't even sleep until you get this matter resolved. Any other thoughts or comments? Yes, ma'am. It's definitely a possibility for sure. Like you said, it's not something that's mentioned directly here in the scripture, but if you take it to its logical conclusion, then yes, the person that you're involved with in this pledge, they will throw you under the bus in a heartbeat. They said, hey, they couldn't keep up their end of the bargain. Don't trust that guy. Good point there. Okay, getting to verses 6 through 11. We get to talk about a lazy person here. Solomon points and deals with the attitude of laziness and uses an example in nature about having good work ethic. So in Proverbs 6, verses 6 through 11, it says, go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? Will you rise from your sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest? So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. So Solomon points to the ant as an example of hard work in nature. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. So what do we learn from the ant here? That pretty much sums it up. There are two major messages Solomon gives about the ant. First, the ant has no captain, overseer, or ruler. You ever had somebody that only seemed like they would work when the manager was around or when the boss was around? Absolutely. You can obviously tell that they didn't want to be caught being lazy on the job. They could have been nothing except fooling around on their phone all shift long. But as soon as management shows up, oh, let me find something to do. All of a sudden, they're putting in all the effort. And it's like, where was this work ethic all afternoon? Ants don't have this problem. They don't need someone watching over them all day long for them to do the work. They just do it. They know it needs to be done. They recognize that their own hard work will pay off. Second, we see that they don't fool around, waste time or resources. The ant provides, so it may be plentiful until harvest. When harvest comes, they gather once again and build back their supply to have plenty. They don't get their provision by fooling around or being lazy. Solomon then says, addressing the sluggard here, how long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall your poverty come upon you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. What's the warning given here? you're lazy, you're not going to have food. Your laziness has consequences. Can't spend all the time sleeping, resting, horsing around, being lazy, being unproductive. Now, is rest important? Is sleep important? Is it important to take a day off every now and then? Absolutely. But you can't let that be your life. Like all good things, too much of it can turn into a bad thing. And they become a bad thing when work, productivity are neglected for the sake of these things. I have to be careful not to let taking a day off or I need a nap turn into bad and lazy habits. Just as Solomon says, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall your poverty come on you like a prowler and your need like an armed man. What starts off as a little rest, a little sleep, taking a day off, if left unchecked, can translate into lazy habits, into losing motivation, into lacking productivity. Then next thing you know, all those days you took off or called in sick just to get that extra rest, they turned into paychecks looking a little slim here. Don't have enough to pay the bills. Don't have enough to buy groceries. Don't have enough to buy gas. And in the time Solomon is writing, a person being lazy meant that they lose out on money, on food for their family. They can't just put off seed time and harvest. If it's seed time and harvest, you need to get out there and plant, water, and gather, depending on the times. Again, there's nothing wrong with rest, sleep, the occasional day off. They're much needed. They're much helpful. Cannot let that life, our whole lives, come to a standstill because of lazy attitudes. And go ahead, Sue. Enabling. You know, to your point, I was actually just about to loop this back to what we were talking about in the first five verses. You get somebody who's lazy that wants to get into, like we talked about in the first five verses, this kind of agreement with you. You're going to be enabling this person and their lazy habits, or as we'll see in a minute, wicked habits. And you're stuck in that. You make this pledge, this surety. You're going to be stuck in that. You're going to be stuck enabling this person. And what's the good in that for either person involved? Ain't no good. They're not going to learn their lesson. You're going to be stuck not only having to worry about yourself, not only having to do your own hard work, but have to support this person too. Got to be careful about who we make agreements with. And we got to be careful not to let ourselves become lazy, not to let ourselves become unmotivated and unproductive. Okay, getting to verses 12 through 19, some of the big ones here, which describe the awful, sinful attitude of the worthless, wicked, abominable person. Verse 12 begins, "A worthless person, a wicked man, walks with a perverse mouth. He winks with his eyes. He shuffles his feet. He points with the fingers. Perversity is in his heart. He devises evil continually. He sows discord. Therefore, his calamity shall come suddenly. Suddenly, he shall be broken without remedy. These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren." There's a lot to unpack here. A worthless person, a wicked man, walks with a perverse mouth, winks with his eyes, shuffles his feet, points with his fingers. Perversity is in his heart, devises evil continually, sows discord. His calamity shall come suddenly. Suddenly he shall be broken without remedy. Solomon's describing very interesting actions from the worthless person here. Winking, shuffling the feet, pointing the fingers. What's meant by this? Con man? That about sums it up. Big idea is he's using his full body for sin. I like what you said. He's a con man. And you know, looking at this verse, can't help but think of people signaling. I think somebody, your translation said signaling, didn't it? Signaling, like, there, that one. Signaling, secret signals of like, there's the person you want to rob, pickpocket them. They got $150 in their left pocket. Something like that. Winks with his eyes. Now, I get the big idea here of someone who's using their whole body for sinful purposes. His entirety is given over to evil. You know, the parts of our body are used as instruments, and they can be used for sin or they can be used for righteousness. I think about Romans chapter 6, verse 19, where Paul says, I speak in human terms because of the weakness of your flesh, for just as you presented your members as slaves of uncleanness and of lawlessness, leading to more lawlessness, so now present your members as slaves of righteousness for holiness. He writes this after previously saying in verses 12 and 13 of Romans chapter 6, therefore do not let sin reign in your mortal body, that you should obey it in its lusts, and do not present your members as instruments of unrighteousness to sin, but present yourselves to God as being alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness to God. So he writes this after showing the power of baptism, how we're set free from sin and should not return to it. But our members, talking about members of our body, our own body, they need to be instruments of righteousness. Well, here in Proverbs, we see someone using their members as instruments of unrighteousness. Now, more specifically, now we talked about that. That's what I get for doing my notes out of order. Somebody makes a comment, and I'm like, yeah, I wrote about that. And we get to it later on, and I'm just like, whoop, said that already, basically. But yeah, like we said earlier, kind of a code among others. You're in this, like, I almost think of it as like a crew of crime, if you will. And you're using these signals to point out what to do and to whom. Along with this, we see his speech is perverse. So he speaks evilly against others, verbally abuses others, maybe swears. His own heart is perverse, and therefore his actions and his speech follow suit. He is constantly planning wickedness to get involved in. He sows discord, whispers in the ears of others in order to bring conflict. And so discord among people, friends, family, even in the church. What is the end result of this person? Broken without help. That sums it up. Calamity. Go ahead. even if you have that thought that you may want to turn back from it, sometimes the consequences catch up before you can, which, as Solomon says, his calamity shall come suddenly. The thing that unites this with what we just read about the ant and the sluggard, the consequences come suddenly. We cannot just plan our entire lives. You know, we want to plan our entire lives, but here's the thing. People like this, there are some that are in the wickedness for the long run. And then there are some that think, I'll do whatever I want up until this point in time. Then I'll give myself over to God. What's the problem with that? Calamity comes suddenly. Poverty came suddenly. Before you could change your lifestyle, the consequences caught up, and now you are facing all these things. Yeah, absolutely. That's for sure. That is absolutely right. You know, calamity, death's included in that. That's absolutely included in that. We'll talk later this morning in the sermon. We're going to talk about Haman in the sermon this morning. And we're going to talk about, actually, a proverb we'll see much later on. Pride goeth before destruction. And to sum up my next 30 minutes, that's about it. We can only hope that he shows mercy on us if we change our lives. But in the case of this person, we don't see remorse at all here. We see somebody who's all in on it, and we see someone who then suffers that sudden calamity because of it. All this wickedness that they're involved in, they're in it. They're all for it. They want to be a part of it. They gain from it. He thinks he's got it all. This person, the wicked man, the worthless man, he thinks he's got it all. He thinks he can do whatever he wants with whoever he wants. Gets whatever he wants. He thinks his life is great. And then, what happens? Like we said, the calamity comes. He gets caught, imprisoned for it. Sentenced. He loses everything. Maybe he gets involved in an accident he did not foresee. Maybe he gets exposed and his reputation is ruined. Maybe he loses his life and his soul, like we've been talking about. All these things could come upon him in a moment's notice. And what does he do? He risks it all for a life of wickedness. point. You know, that thought makes me think of our first five verses we talked about. Because maybe somebody wants to get into this pledge or this surety for someone that is wicked and think that this will help them get out of their wickedness. It doesn't always work that way. Which again goes back to the warning Solomon gave. Don't do this. Get out of these agreements. Don't put yourself in these pledges and snare yourself by your words. And, you know, one other thing I want to point out from the wicked man before we're dismissed, because we got just a minute left. We highlighted his wickedness, but what is the first thing that Solomon says about him? Worthless. That's a strong word to use about somebody. Worthless. No redeeming qualities. No chance of coming back from his wickedness. A con man to the core. That's a scary thought to be. Either be that person or be involved with that person. So we got to be careful. When we see these are signs that Solomon gives us. These are the things that show what a wicked person is. Watch out for them. Don't be involved with these kinds of people. Don't become these kinds of people. And with that, we are out of time. Thank you all so much for your comments. We'll pick up with verse 16 Wednesday.